What's really good? What's going on? A little bit late, but always on time. Y'all know what it is. It's the Chop Up Show. It's your girl, Toya G. It feels so good to be back. I don't know if y'all can tell in my voice, but your girl is tired. I've been all over the place. I was in D.C., came back to California, been hitting the ground running, trying to just finish out this week. So I've been pushing and pulling this first week of April, but it still feels good to be here with y'all. I am also here with the political plug. You already know how it goes now. He held it down last week in my absence. And
you're welcome.
Talked about he who shall not be named, but has been named 34 times in a court in Manhattan in relationship to criminal charges. So we're watching that unfold. But if you want to get the breakdown on why, I'll go ahead and say it. Trump and his criminal charges and the investigations being brought up by the Manhattan district attorney's offices and all relevant or important, go back and check out that episode. It just happened last week, last Thursday. And, you know, we hear every Thursday night talking about what we talk about. Shout out to Miss Ma'am in the comments. So happy to see y'all back. You know the rules. You know how we get down. If you come in here, don't be rude. You need to speak. You need to say what's up. Let us know you in the building, mostly because we're just so grateful to have you. In terms of this week, we want to talk about a couple of things, right? So 2024 is an eye shot. It's an ear shot. And we want to really
break election that. Season.
Exactly. Because we've only been hearing a lot about election season in regards to the Republicans. Shout out to Danielle in the chat. What's going on? Good evening. And so we want to kind of talk about one of the most obvious potential presidential candidates and current vice president.
Yeah. Current VP.
Yeah, exactly. Kamala Harris. Shout out to Top P Got Beats. But we want to talk about Kamala Harris and just really get a vibe check, because there's a lot of interesting criticisms being thrown her way these days. And then secondly, breaking news, Clarence Thomas is on the chopping block, right? We potentially could be seeing a lot of interesting.
We got to get in his ass. We got to get in his ass real quick.
We might be seeing a lot of interesting things coming down the pipeline for Clarence Thomas in the coming weeks and months to come, because he's about to be under investigation on it. He has been, apparently, and they didn't like what they found. So let's go ahead and get started. I think all of today is a political chop in one way or another. But we want to go ahead and get started with Kamala Harris and really break down kind of how we should understand her vice presidency up to right now.
Toya, can we be real about what we actually talk about when it comes to Kamala Harris?
I thought I was being real. I didn't know I was being fake. So tell me, let's be real.
Because I wouldn't say you was being fake, but I do think you're being kind. You know what I'm saying? Niggas treat Kamala Harris like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, yeah, I mean, like, she does it, like, for her to be, you know, in the eyes of, you know, a lot of mainstream media, a lot of mainstream thinkers, in their eyes, it's the first Black vice president, right?
The first woman vice president.
The first Black, you know what I'm saying? Like, she a couple first. But like with people, every time her name get brought up, it's like in joke fashion. You feel me? Joe, we did it, Joe. Like, even her moment of celebration with Smoke. So we need to figure out, is it deserved?
Well, I mean, so I guess, because I want to be real, like, you know, the silk press jokes are out. Her and the Queen Latifah, I saw on Twitter, were having a silk press down, and people were trying to figure out and argue who has the absolute best, because they have not been seen not one time with a strand out of place. Now, a lot of people gave the crown to the queen, right, and said Queen Latifah has the best, most legendary, most epic silk press that there is on these streets, but that is a lot of what people talk about in terms of Kamala Harris. They also, you know, used to make the jokes when she was first in office that we will only ever see her in videos walking aggressively in one way, in one direction or another, walking through the White House, walking to a pole. Like, she was always
in that
walking
power in suit.
Yes. And then lastly, and one of the more problematic, when I look at it in hindsight, observations that a lot of people made was about her always laughing, right? Always kind of, she just has a laugh, or she has a nervous laugh. She laughs all the time before she speaks or while she's speaking. And a lot of people would allude that laughter to drug use or to her being high. And that's where I think it's kind of messed up, right? That would hear
the
that
nerve.
You know what I'm saying? And so I guess And I also
Donald Trump snorting ass. Like, y'all don't see how much Donald Trump be snorting when he talking?
Honestly, y'all talking about Kamala? I mean, and tell me if I'm tripping in the chat, if y'all have heard some of these same kind of criticisms, either about the silk press or the constant walking or the constant laughing and that association with drug use. But these are common little, like, quips that I would hear people make about her in a variety of places. And mm-hmm. I need to be honest, because I think if we were to pull back some of the tape on us, and I'm talking me, you, and Lee, I think we might have even been talking a little jazzy about good sis way earlier in the process. And yeah. I think he might have been a little baseless. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to go back and listen. I ain't gonna say baseless because we don't typically
get we don't know baseless niggas. No, because with her becoming vice president, the things that you pointing out, it has become a lot more superficial. But mm-hmm. we actually not only, you know, did we have a conversation about her. We actually, we had a whole debate. I think was it me and Lee? Or was it me and...
It might have been you and
Lee. Or me and Marquise. But we definitely had a debate on the platform about yeah. Kamala. And it had to do with her record as the top cop in California.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing that a lot of other... that people who were critical of her during during her run... In the presidential campaign, had to do with, yo, you was locking up kids over truancy. Right. You know what I mean, like you did a lot to maintain, to create and develop relationships with the systems and institutions, and the people who had to suffer under you building your political credibility was Black people.
But I'm saying, and then that was valid because of the time. Context is important. We were looking at somebody who was about to take over the reins of power in a very prolific way, and we needed to understand right. the way her policing background would influence her ability to preside over right. the American people, right? Even right. in a vice presidential position. So that was relevant. I don't think now those criticisms mean quite as much. Like, you can still make them. People's track record in their background is their track record in their background. But for right now, I guess I have to ask the obvious question after we look mm-hmm. at our behaviors, the behaviors of the public, the criticism she had about she's been getting about not doing too much. Is this a classic case of misogynoir? Like, you know what I'm saying? We got this Black woman in a position that has never been occupied by anyone Black or anybody who's a woman. Intersectionality matters. We know that white supremacy and patriarchy intersect as matrices of power to then create even more unique barriers to her than she would have had, than even Mike Pence had. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the uniqueness. Is that it's hard enough to be vice president, and then you got right. these two matrices of power working together against your interest as a Black woman, white supremacy, heteropatriarchy. Is this a classic case of us constantly bagging on the Black woman instead of really kind of giving her a chance or opportunity? Or has she really just only been laughing and having silk presses and walking and shit? Like, what's the vibe? What do you think?
And right, and when we're talking in terms of specifically in terms of her being vice president, right?
Exactly.
All right, so I think a part of it has been that the ambiguity of the Black question in and of itself. You feel me? I don't think a lot of people have gotten past that. So even as people try to give her the credit,
what do you mean? What do you mean in terms of the ambiguity of the Black question?
So her father's Jamaican, right? Her father's Jamaican, and her mother is Indian, and. Currently, she's and again, I'm only speaking to like certain optics that play out in Black communities, right? But she's married to a white man, right? Optics wise, now we just not talking about the politics of interracial relationships, but optics wise, like we heard a lot of the criticism, like if Michelle Obama was a white woman, Barack Obama wouldn't be Barack Obama. You see what I'm saying? And so people kind of look at, okay, you are like, she's already, you know, biracial and she's married to a white man. When we trying to, all this Blackness we trying to put on her, if we look at like the way her social life is currently set up, and then you look at her politics as if like in terms of her time as being the top cop in California, mm-hmm. then like that whole her being the first Black VP ain't a benefit to Black people because she don't fully reflect it, right? And whether it's her Asian heritage and her relationship and, you know, all those other things, as well as, you know, how people in California felt about that past that still ain't been reconciled with. Like we no longer, it's no longer being highlighted as much because Joe Biden won. So we're not hearing about the crime bill as much. and mm-hmm. she's his vice president. So we're not hearing about what happened with her in in California as much. But those things weren't resolved. Mm-hmm. Right. This is kind of like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are the rebound. They're like, okay, we just got out of a very toxic relationship. Mm-hmm. It was bad. It was abusive. Mentally.
I've enjoyed your framing of the Trump presidency as a toxic relationship. You've used that phrase a couple times. It's just interesting how you come to terms with that experience.
Well, because I think it best helps us understand how we end up with a Joe Biden in the first place. Like, Joe Biden isn't like the most effective. He's not the most progressive, right? Mm-hmm. But what he is he's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump was so bad that the people that was like, we need to change the system. We need to do things differently. Like on that was closer to the left side. Mm-hmm. We're like, no, we need to go back to normal. We need to go back to normal. Right. Like, let's at least get back to kind of like where we was a few years ago. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so like you get out of that toxic relationship, the first person to treat you nice. Oh, like this nigga ain't cussing me out. Right. This nigga ain't calling me out my name. All right, cool. I could be with you. Okay. You know what I'm saying? You don't cuss me out. I can be with you. We can sit down and chill without you flipping out. Like, this can be something. And then after a while, you realize, like, okay, this was something to, it was a bridge.
I settled. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Right. And it was a bridge to get over what we was dealing with in the past. Like, you know what I'm saying? In that thing prior, right? So right now, when we look at Kamala, it's still, we still got some baggage. Right. All those other things that we had problems with, those things are still there. And now that we're no longer just happy that we got away from our ex, now those things are still, they're glaring more than they have in the past.
Understood. And so, I mean, you know, I guess it's not then maybe not a clean cut case of misogynoir or like, you know, beating up on the black women. Cause I think first and foremost, and I'll get to why too later, we got to give her full credibility and credence for being a black woman, right? I think being skeptical about that, we've had prior conversations about biracial relationships, interracial relationships, and, you know, the ability for black women to determine their partners and, you know, the importance of us looking at just people in general, being able to, like, love who they want to love. It is complicated, it's sticky, but I don't think, and we kind of agree that it doesn't crowd out or overshadow your politics, or at least the ability to look at what your literal politics are and not base that off of who you fell in love with. So, nigga, not going to get on her head too hard about marrying this Irish man. In terms of her parents and their backgrounds, you know, Jamaica was a boat stop, you know, on many boat stops. So to kind of separate his blackness out or put an asterisk by it is an mm-hmm. interesting decision to make, just because he doesn't have the traditional American black experience. And then for her Indian mama, I mean, yeah, but we understand how colorism and caste systems and exclusion work in
how Indian colors
too. So no, those are not necessarily black issues, but they are cousins of an anti-black system and structure in this world that denies you phenotypically based on how your skin color is set up. It's light-skinned Indians too, and her mom is not one of those light-skinned Indians, right? So I think as we converge her South Asian and black identities, right, I think she occupies African-Americanness in the sense that she was not born in any of those countries. She was born in this one. And so there's a lot of levels and layers to it, but I think uniquely as a black woman, she's just in an interesting role. Miss Ma'am says, pretty sure I heard y'all break down that the vice president mainly moves in the background. I stopped listening to slander after that. If we don't see what her role really is, all that noise is just noise. And I agree a lot, which is why I want to revisit and make sure we specifically know what the vice president's job is. Because a lot of people are like, she ain't doing nothing. But I bet your bottom dollar, some of those same people saying those things cannot clearly and concisely articulate to you what the vice president is supposed to do. Right? So to be clear,
most of them can't tell you what the president is supposed to do. But
exactly. Right? But I want to be clear about what the vice president is supposed to do, just so that you already have a functional filter for when you see what she's doing or not doing, you know what's inbounds versus what's out of bounds, right? So the vice president most simply has three primary roles. Their first mm-hmm. job is to be, what's good, Vance? Welcome in. The vice president's first job is to be first in the line of succession. We know if anything happens to the president, if the president is to experience something that incapacitates them and renders them unable to fulfill their job or responsibility as president, the vice president jumps in. So I like to think your job might just be to sit and be comfortable and be safe a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Because you are the next person who has to jump in and be Johnny on the spot and fill in some gaps. So, or Johnetta on the spot in this instance. Yes, Joanne on the spot to fill in the gap in the void. But that's not all. The second responsibility is to be the tie-breaking vote in Senate, right? We know that the Senate has to win a clear majority. There are times where we experience gridlock, and that gridlock is not solely because of opposition, but rather because the votes are too close. And so the vice president ends up having to make some important decisions in that regard. And we're going to talk about Kamala's track record in that role specifically, because she's done something unique in terms of her role in Senate, being that tie-breaking vote, okay? So the third role that vice presidents have that's important to keep in mind is that they are presidential advisors, right? They are exactly in the air, and I don't think it necessarily takes a president to get up and make an address or give a State of the Union and be like, me and Kamala was talking in. No, they the president. They supposed to sound like they came up with shit by themselves. They supposed to sound like they made some concise decisions, but we all know if you watch, I mean, and I understand these are fiction, but any type of show that, you know, gets into the role of the president or looks at the, like, they got people all up in their ear. They sit in the room in the Oval Office with six people around them telling them how to piece together, how to talk about it right, how to negotiate, how to make certain decisions.
And what's interesting about that is Joe Biden was able to get away with just being Barack Obama, like, angry white homeboy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
cut the malarkey.
Like Joe Biden was the one that was just, when Obama was, when he was being respectful and he was trying to appeal to the other side.
Yeah.
Biden was the one like, nah, hey, y'all, hey, let's stop the bullshit. I mean, all the memes that came out about that. So it's like, if you look at that advisor role, right? Like, for whatever we think, she's supposed to be doing. That assumption was not made with Joe Biden, because he was just the old white pit bull that Obama had to be like, hold on, get back. Jay Universe is funny too. He said it's the husband for me. I told you.
He looked like his grandparents were slave owners. He looked like his grandparents were slave owners. Probably was, but again, he's Irish, so maybe not. Right? It depends on how you look at the impoverished. That in particular group of people, because I mean, some people, poor people probably had slaves. It's the difference between being poor and being a slave. So maybe.
Right.
The world may never know. I don't know. I don't want to know. I just I don't want to be complicated by these relationships, these entanglements any longer. But, okay, so outside of being a presidential advisor, they are representatives of Danielle, exactly. Mr. Plug here is tripping with these impersonations, but the vice president is also a representative of the president, right? So goes on behalf of, speaks on behalf of, acts on behalf of, in a world where the president can't be present. And so, you know, I think we ought to be clear about what vice presidents are supposed to do when we determine whether somebody's doing a job. They're not going to be the first person behind the mic because they've advised the first person behind the mic, or they have gone out to represent the first person who's supposed to be on the mic. So no, they don't get as much airtime and attention on the things that they do, because we are looking to a president, right? We live in a society where we are looking for one central person in that executive role to go and be an executor. So we're not really as interested in the secondary,
the ancillary pieces,
exactly,
auxiliary pieces. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Those are not nearly when we are comprehending whether or not somebody's doing a good or bad job, particularly as a presidential party, the moving pieces that make that engine run. So we know what a vice president does. I guess my question then becomes, like, what do we want from a vice? Do we want more than that? Are we looking for more from either a vice president or from this vice president, right? We know that Kamala was voted in as vice president, understanding a couple things. She attempted to run for the presidency and was unsuccessful. And two, we know that the Democrats were needing somebody to pivot and swing that vote toward them. And they needed a running mate for Joe Biden that represented diversity, represented change, represented the shifting tides of liberalism that the party wanted to represent. And so they found this Black woman who was appetizing to at least enough people to get some folks on board who were skeptical about Joe Biden and the crime bill and his relationship to Black people and this and that. So I'll re-ask my question, plug. What do we want from a vice president? If not, what do we want from this vice president, understanding how and why she got into the role she's in right now?
So even though I've complained about this from time to time, when it comes to how Black people engage in politics, I'm going to be real. We have an impossible demand on Black politicians. Correct. I push back against that impossible demand. Because our demand ain't unique to Kamala. It's not unique to the vice presidency, because it's the same demand that we placed on Barack Obama. Okay. And that was to be a Black politician.
True.
The reason why it's an impossible demand is because politicians have to be the leaders and politicians for entire communities. That includes white people. We know that what the demands and what's important to Black communities, and then the demands of what's important to white communities, what's important to white communities is going to get preferential treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this impossible demand is frustrating because, again, it's impossible, but it's necessary. It's necessary. Like, we can't become okay with being, we can't be okay with Obamas. Like, I'm okay with the fact that nowadays it's a lot of people, like, especially millennials our age, that will shit on Obama's legacy.
Yeah.
And call into question Obama's legacy, because that's exactly what Obama needs, right? So, because when we're thinking about who we want to be the next person in that position, we don't want another Obama. Obama was cool. Obama was what Obama was.
He was the first.
We don't want another one, though. Right? He was the first. He was the first. We don't want another Obama.
You can't take that away from him. He was the first. Good, bad, right, wrong, indifferent. He was the first.
Right. Can't take it away from him. We don't want another one, though. We don't need another one, though. You know what I'm saying? And so as much as we want our politicians to reflect the Blackness that makes us feel comfortable, that makes us assume that the thing that they care about is also something that we care about, or that you know, you look like me and that means something when you out there doing decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that is not a productive overall election strategy. Kamala Harris, as much as we want her to go out there and be Angela Davis, she can't.
She can't.
I think I've said this before too. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's in that position because she's not Angela Davis.
Right.
Like, Jackie Robinson was the first, not because he was the best, but because he was the most suited. He was suitable, right? Satchel Paige is a bad man. Yeah. Shout out to Kansas City Monarchs. Fastest baseball player in the history of the game, right? Could steal a base before a penny drop.
Mm.
He was a nigga though. Such a nigga. You can't take him to the Dodgers.
Hey, you man, feel me? You know, shout out to Kansas City for having a school named after him. Shout out to
Satchel Paige Elementary School. But so the reality is, as much as what we want from Kamala Harris, and as much as I want to celebrate Kamala Harris, and as much as I'm looking at her in the accomplishments you gonna list, how important they are, how significant they are, it still can never match the impossible demand that Black people place on their politicians, because it's what we need. Right? Okay. It's what reflect that autonomy.
And so I want you to pull up. There's the plug is about to get a video ready to really kind of deal with one of the critics and the recent accomplishments she's made. But before we get to some of the recent activity, Vice President Harris has been on, and Peace My Asia, shout out to you. Happy to have you up in here always. I want to talk about some of Vice President Kamala Harris's accomplishments so far. Right. So y'all know I mentioned earlier one of her responsibilities, the responsibility of a vice president, is to provide the tie-breaking votes when Senate is running even. And I want to be clear that Vice President Harris has broken 29 ties in Senate, three in 2023, the most in modern history. Only vice presidents John C. Calhoun and John Adams broke more. And this is an important thing to note. Presiding over the Senate, breaking ties is needed in the Senate, and serving as president if the sitting president is removed or incapacitated are the only other constitutional roles of the VP, right? Other notable accomplishments that she has made has been that Vice President Harris has advocated for increased HBCU funding as an alumna of Howard University, pushing the Biden administration to allocate billions of dollars in funding to HBCUs, continuing her support of HBCUs that she's shown previously as a U.S. senator. She was instrumental in the passage of the American Rescue Plan, which included a $2 trillion COVID relief stimulus bill. So some of the stimulus checks that we got during the Biden administration were ones that were pushed and were bargained for, and those efforts were led by her in particular. She, in addition to being responsible for a lot of the conversations at the border, and about the border, right? She was, her responsibility was specifically to kind of deal with and attend to working at the border. She has also been a champion of maternal health and has toured the country advocating for women's rights to choose amid the Supreme Court overturning of Roe versus Wade. So she's been a very visible, you know, she might can't be a black, the black president, but she can be the woman vice president, right? Very much so, and speak for 50% of the population, and not even 50%, because when we're talking about the rights to determine your, you know, access to abortions, we're talking about anybody with the capacity to give birth. So not just women, but more than 50% of the population when you think about trans men and non-gender folks, non-gender binary folks. I have a couple other examples. Let's see. In speaking about the border, Vice President Harris has helped to address the southern border crisis, which has seen a surge in the number of migrants from Mexico and Central America seeking unauthorized authority to the United States. I'm sorry, not authority, but residency in the United States. Now, I will say this. We know kids are still in cages. We know ICE is still real. We know that Democrats are fumbling the money and fucking up the bag when it comes to immigrants. So we're not going to try to paper over that and make it seem like that's not real. But work is being done, at least in the capacity of what a vice president can do. So that being said, if we look at the most recent action that Vice President Kamala Harris has been on, we know she took a trip to West Africa. And her trip to West Africa was multifaceted. We'll get into the video and I'll talk more specifically about that. But what we do know is that China and that Russia are, and the United States are on their land grab shit right now. And not only that, but outside of specifically grabbing land, they are attempting to make sure they're able to commodify the labor and the capital in a bunch of different places. What does that mean? It means the United States used to have a stronghold on the financial backbone and decision-making on the continent of Africa. And now China and Russia, mostly China, sliding in, trying to be the hegemonic or superpower that in which the African economy flows, right? Buying a bunch of stuff, engaging in a bunch of trade deals, engaging in a bunch of venture capitalism over there, just really gaining its own popularity. The United States is like, no. We understand how essential the continent is, but also there is an understanding about how important that needs to be a bilateral relationship, right? Not unilateral, where the United States gets to dictate and determine from one direction everything there, but also ways by which there can be a symbiotic and mutually beneficial relationship between the continent, particularly West Africa and the United States, especially given the history of chattel slavery, right? Particularly the history of the violences that have happened there. So she made a couple trips, went to Tanzania, went to, I think the other place will be mentioned in the video that we're about to play. She made a stop at Cape Castle. We know the Cape Castle is where the Door of No Return is. Plug, do you know what the Door of No Return is?
Where enslaved Africans would be boarded onto slave ships to be sent to the Americas, where they would not come back.
And she went there specifically and made, you know, a speech and, of course, talked about the fact that these stories need to be told and reflected on her own connection and relationship to that particular port. So the time was interesting, but, you know, we wouldn't be who we are as Black folk if we didn't have some situations where the prince of, what does he call himself? The prince of Pan-Africanism.
The prince of Pan-Africanism, yes.
We wouldn't be us as niggas if the prince of Pan-Africanism didn't step up to the mic to be critical of the trip that was made. Now, I will preface the video that Plug is about to play for a minute with saying that a lot of people criticized Kamala Harris during her time in Africa for apparently advocating for and accosting West African countries for their recent legislation and policies that have made LGBTQ activity punishable by death, calls for imprisonment, all of these different mm-hmm. things. And so a lot of people have been like, you went over there and you got shut down because Africa ain't with that shit. You know, our people, our original people ain't really about to play games with you with this LGBTQ shit. And so, whatever. But I think this video will introduce the sentiments of your Prince of Pan-Africanism. And also the sentiments of other people, but also reasons why people can have a seat with that perspective. So go ahead and drop the vid. Let's get into it.
You went to Africa not to help a child, not to help a family, not to cancel no debt, not to build no institutions, not to address these coups that the CIA financed. You didn't go to Africa, Kamala Harris, to do anything progressive. You went to Africa to make Ghana safe for the Rainbow Mafia.
So the Prince of Panhandle is out here again lying on Vice President Kamala Harris. It's obvious at this point that you don't even know why the fuck she was there in Africa. And for somebody who claims to be a doctor and has this degree, child, you would think you would do a little research before you open your mouth. After MA45 left office, he left our foreign relations with Africa in shambles after he cut off so much financial aid to the continent. U.S. and African trade fell to approximately $41 billion in 2018, down from $100 billion in 2008. Now, Vice President Kamala Harris pulled up to Africa with a silk press and a bag full of money, and she's leaving with a bag full of nickel. Let me explain.
Work is currently underway to build the first of its kind processing facility on the continent for minerals that go into electric vehicle batteries. Mm. This will deliver battery-grade nickel to the United States and global markets as soon as 2026.
Investing in nickel power batteries is going to address our climate change and create clean and renewable energy jobs. It's going to create equity not only for Africa, but for America. See, this is what happens when your ass don't read. But VP Kamala's even taking it further. She's investing $1 billion throughout the continent. Dr. Umar Johnson says she's not doing anything for families, but she's literally investing $400 million into closing the gender gap, $525 million into women economic empowerment throughout Africa. Like, are you mad at she's doing all these things for women? Because that's what the fuck it sounds like. It sounds like you're mad at this is going to benefit black women, Mr. Pan-Africanism. Vice President Kamala Harris wasn't there to party and to show off her silk press. She was there to work and rebuild and rekindle our foreign relations. As far as pushing an agenda, the Rainbow Coalition, they asked her a simple question and she answered. She doesn't switch up on a hoe just because she's trying to make friends with people. She's a true ally, ride or fucking die. And this is what the fuck she said when they asked her a question. What do you think about Parliament introducing anti-LGBT legislation? She said this.
Let me be clear about where we stand. First of all, for the American press who are here, you know that a great deal of work in my career has been to address human rights issues, equality issues across the board, including as it relates to the LGBT community. And I feel very strongly about the importance of supporting the freedom and supporting and fighting for equality among all people, and that all people be treated equally. I will also say that this is an issue that we consider, and I consider, to be a human rights issue, and that will not change.
That was it, and that was all. We don't switch up on people just because we're trying to make new friends. We stay true to who the fuck we are. But since you want to talk about what somebody's doing for other people, let's look at what the fuck you're doing. Okay, Prince of Panhandling, since you want to talk about what VP Kamala Harris has been up to, let's look at this Frederick Douglass Wakanda Academy.
Because the rest
of you went to Africa not to help a child, not to help a family, not to cancel no debt, not to build no institute.
So the rest of this video, and this video I want to give credit to who created it, is Too Raw, Too Real Too on TikTok. But the rest of the video is just him going in on apparently Dr. Umar's, he called it the Wakanda Academy, but the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy of Excellence or whatever the hell is being created and the lack of development therein. And he deserves that because when you look at the track record and you look at the background of what Kamala Harris has done or accomplished just in that trip, right? I think what we start getting at is, I mean, yeah, nah, she can't be the black vice president, but she can absolutely attend to in ways that are open to the vice president issues that affect black people and the black community, right? And he went from being the Prince of Pan-Africanism to the Prince of Panhandling, as Vance said, because a lot of his efforts have seemed to line his pockets and only benefit him, but not materialize things. So you know, I guess my takeaway from this conversation, I wanted to peek in on President, Vice President Harris, because we know, like we started the conversation off saying, 2024 is coming. We've heard more about Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump and other individuals than we have about who is up on the docket in terms of the Democratic Party. But we do know a couple things. Joe Biden is like 82 years old. Kamala Harris is like 58, 59. That is relatively young in comparison to other people who are viable candidates for that presidency. We know the young folks.
Yeah, Joe Biden need to sit his ass down. Like, we do,
And I don't think that's.
We don't need no more 80 year olds.
But we know that they're not going to go as far. They're not going to go into the 30s like AOC. And so she's primed in terms of the right age and the right demographic.
She's at the right age. Yeah.
She might get a reformulated and rehabilitated run at the White House, and something that we should maybe be on the lookout for. But we need to be gauging her progress, her success, her proficiency in the role that she's in. And now that we understand what Vice President's supposed to be doing on top of what she has actually been doing, I'm interested, and I want to make sure we stay interested in being on Kamala watch to see what comes of this 2024 run. And also just to see the other things she's able to accomplish in her role for the rest of this presidency, right? Because we're not going to get in front of that. We got to see what the rest of her legacy is going to be. But that's me.
Yeah, I think she has some viability. I mean, especially when you got people like Donald Trump is dealing with being indicted, and Ron DeSantis still can't take a firm affirmative grip on the conservative party. Donald Trump still controls a lot of it. And so she's viable, right? Like, and I think in a lot of like liberal circles, like old boy was like, you know, these are the things that she's doing now. Again, from a leftist perspective, nickel mining in Africa,
right?
We could talk about neoliberalism, neocolonialism, the way that capitalism functions to rob Africa of its resources and really pay it pennies in return. We could talk about that, right?
Like, that's real. It's rough on the environment. It's rough on the people in those communities. It has its own baggage. Let's be honest about it.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And so, and without them actually doing anything about the ways in which tech companies are taking advantage of the resources in Africa currently, yeah, we can make it about nickel, and we can talk about. And that's why Dr. Umar Johnson and them don't need to criticize liberals, because y'all give them too much ammo for credibility and shit that they trying to grow on. You feel me? Like, it, bro. It ain't over there. It ain't a question of what is she doing for families. Bro, there are children workers in the mines of Congo making the resources for iPhones.
Listen,
mining the resources for iPhones. What do you mean? What are you talking about, families, bro?
I want to translate this into debate language for our people who want to understand how we kind of describe some of these issues from where we come from. This is the case debate. I don't even have to come in here and talk my black shit, talk my woman shit, talk my shit about how you aren't really appeasing the needs of black families and black community. I could just go in and criticize your politics just because they're bad. I don't even need to leverage my personal ideologies against what you're doing. That will come secondary. But at the game, you have a bad plan. You want to go over there and focus on everything except for the fact that human lives are being used as capital and used as labor and being abused. Their communities being open to all the toxic environmental influences that mining for minerals and shit does to localized communities. Like, I don't even have to, that could be anywhere.
It was an image.
Those behaviors, we criticize behaviors no matter where they happen on the planet. I could just criticize you on just what you do to the environment without us even intersecting how that influences black people, queer people. So it's just.
And that's what I've been saying. Like, let me help Umar Johnson. If we're going to criticize Kamala Harris, we don't criticize her for saying that the issues facing queer people is a human rights issue.
Yeah.
We criticize her for expanding the neocolonial empire of America.
Yeah.
Right? The transnational reach of American corporations and American control over African resources. You're supposed to be Mr. Pan-Africanism, but your beef with Kamala Harris is her conversation on gay rights. When literally she's saying we're opening a mine as a part of the U.S., we're not hiding it. This isn't something that you got to see. We're sneaking in. We're announcing the fact that we're going to be utilizing resources that come out of Africa. Mr. Pan-Africanism.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's where it becomes like y'all childish. Like your focus, what matters to you is so it becomes so counterproductive that the legitimate criticism of Kamala Harris, which ain't even really a criticism of Kamala Harris, it's a criticism of the institution.
Yeah.
Right. It's a criticism of America, like of American imperialism, American exceptionalism, right? Like white supremacy. It's a larger criticism of those things, but no, y'all want to make it about liberals pushing the gay agenda in Africa.
Right. Stupid. We'll keep our eyes open, keep our ears open. We'll continue to be talking about things. You know, we always stay with the political chops around here so that we know what we need to be thinking about before we get in a position to cast ballots or to make decisions or to, you know, one of my favorite options is to not participate. Every now and again, my absence has to be felt. The plug doesn't agree with that, but this is why we have these types of conversations so you can determine what you do with yourself and your political power and your political economy. But let's talk about Clarence Thomas real quick. I'm going to turn it over to the plug so we can get into what has been happening in the news.
All right, so getting into what's happening with Clarence Thomas real quick. This is the season of accountability, y'all. This is the season of accountability. Whoever that's been here with me now, y'all was here with me when we was talking about Trump a couple of days ago, and we literally saying that when we're watching what these people in power are doing, it is an affront. It is disrespect for us to sit back, let them pimp and manipulate the system, and then turn around and a year later, literally tell us, yeah, let's vote for me. I'm going to be holding people accountable. Vote for people. Like, nah, that's bullshit. What a major issue that we need to be bringing into 2024 is at first we thought it was just a question of stacking the courts, but nah, it's a lot deeper than that. It's actually a question of what the access that what politicians, period, people, period, have to Supreme Court justices with all the protections that Supreme Court justice has. For those who are not aware, anybody that's been paying any attention to politics just today, recently, ProRepublica.org, which is it's a political watchdog website, released a report entitled Clarence Thomas and the Billionaire. Let me get that up on the screen so we can all see the report in and of itself. And what this report outlines is that Clarence Thomas, every black person's favorite Supreme Court justice.
Jesus, Lord help us all. Now that every black person, Andrew Brown Jackson. Thank you very much. Speak for yourself. Thank you.
Yes, I was definitely speaking facetiously. But this clown, Clarence Thomas, come to find out, literally is all the way bought off. All the way bought off.
Like, it let's not we, for we, years. These are not new. These are not recent revelations either. It's ugly.
This is ugly. Well, like literally, what we learning is that, let's go ahead and get this up here for the world to see.
Mm-hmm.
For Chop Nation to take a look at. It's a little bit of a delay.
This is wild times, though. I mean, and I want to remind us all that these conversations are happening under a backdrop of conversations about term limits for Congress and for the Supreme Court. So a lot of conversations have been had about just how much power and overreach of power people have because they get to sit in these positions and almost get like a professor tenured into their job so that they can't be removed, they can't be fired, they can't be reprimanded in a lot of ways, or at least the ways that people get reprimanded is way behind the curtain. So they'll be exposed. We ain't forgot Clarence Thomas's wife was all up in the mix for January 6th and a whole bunch of other bullshit.
All up in the mix.
You know what I'm saying?
Clarence Thomas' wife is a straight up election denier.
Period.
Straight up.
And so
she was trying to figure out how they could keep Trump in office after he lost the election.
And that stuff has been popping up on our news feeds. It's been popping up in our conversations about what's happening around the world. But then all of a sudden they disappear. We are left on cliffhangers in terms of how that was dealt with or if it was dealt with after all, which to me proves that they just be waiting for shit to leave the news cycle. They don't really be doing nothing. Nothing be happening to these people. They just wait till nobody else is asking questions or talking about it because we've sensationalized the next thing. So Plug got this article pulled up. What are we talking about here?
So, according to ProRepublica, this report on Clarence Thomas, we find out that in late June 2019, right after the U.S. Supreme Court released its final opinion of the term, Justice Clarence Thomas boarded a large private jet headed to Indonesia. He and his wife were going on vacation, 9 days of island hopping in a volcanic archipelago on a super yacht, staffed by a coterie of attendants and private chefs. If Thomas had chartered the plane and the 162-foot yacht himself, the total cost of the trip would have exceeded $500,000 plus. Fortunately for him, this wasn't necessary. He was on vacation with real estate magnate and Republican mega donor Harlan Crow, who owned the jet and the yacht too. So for those who are just now joining us, we're talking about Clarence Thomas is being flew out, as the young people say.
As the young folks say.
Being flew out by a Republican mega donor. This is somebody who spends billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. Putting money in the pockets of Republican politicians so they can keep getting reelected.
Now, can I make an intersection here?
Go ahead.
I want to, so, you know, people always criticize Twitter and social media in general for always recycling the same fucking stupid ass dating based questions and being like, is this fair? Is this foul? And one of the favorite questions of people who, you know, talk about being flued out, right? So the scenario is always like, if a man flies you out to on a vacation, is it fair to for him to expect that he finna get some, basically? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you accept a trip or a vacation or to slide out, is it fair for that person to be upset if you don't put out, right? If you don't give something, or is it a reasonable expectation even that you're going to go out there and do something, right? And a lot of people are like, you know, they problematize that conversation, as they should, right? Because, like, no, there's not automatically an expectation for you to go and bust it down because you're getting flew out. But the other side of that, right, is, especially when we look for the at these political relationships, it's just not that realistic, though, that you go all the way out there, you get all the way on the boat. Now, I can't say this about people. I think it is realistic that people should not have to expect that they have to go and do anything in exchange for their time or their attention on a vacation. I'm making that stance right now. You do not have to get on the plane and assume or expect that you got to give it up to somebody because they want it because you got on that plane. I want to be clear about my sense. That's not what I'm saying. But on this political shit, where we have what we know to be quid pro quo, whereas you got to give something to get something, I think the dynamics of that are completely different. And for some reason, without a shadow of a doubt, I feel like it is ridiculous for us to sit back and assume that if Clarence Thomas got on that yacht and went ahead and sold or flew away and took his wife and experienced it, they was talking about something. There was some bartering being done. There was some interest being protected. There was some investments in relationships. There were some attempts to seal the deal to make sure that politics were politics as usual and that the trains were running on time. And so this is where I get real skeptical about anybody who can look at this and be like, well, people can have their own friends and people can do what they want to. Nah, in these instances, these are exchanges.
Yeah. You definitely. I mean, because, like, this is the thing. While they can say, you know, people could do what they want, people could, you know, have friends, people can go on vacation. Congress, for example, can, like, politicians and federal politicians cannot accept gifts larger than $50. They also cannot go on trips without actually going by the ethics office first. They got to put in applications. If somebody want to send them on a trip, they have to put in the application to the ethics office and get permission by the ethics office to get flew out. For whatever reason, Supreme Court justices don't have to follow those circumstances. What they say, the code of conduct with Supreme Court justices is simply that it's ill-advised to take these trips because it could denote some form of impropriety. It could look like quid pro quo. So while there's no actual law against it, it's advised that they do not. The type of trips that Clarence Thomas went on with this individual, the places that they went to, the amount of time that Clarence Thomas spends at this individual's properties, on this individual's plane, on this individual's yacht, right? Like, to the level of which he's getting benefits, right? When we know this is an individual who specifically works to put money in the pockets of conservatives to push conservative agendas. Now, understand why billionaires support political parties in the first place. just like the rest of us, they think the world should look a particular way. The difference, they have the money to convince people that the world should look the way that they think it should look. The Supreme Court, ironically, sided in a what was known as the Citizens United case that money equals free speech.
Yes, it did.
You want to know who also sided with Citizens United?
Who?
Clarence Thomas also sided with Citizens United.
Of course.
That money was free, was free speech. So what happens is the conservative billionaires, as much as we hear about George Soros, as much as we hear about Bill Gates, conservative billionaires have the money and the influence to be able to shape the world in the way that they want to see it. So when we look back, and we look at it, we look at situations like what happened with Roe v. Wade being overturned. That is specifically a question of a culture war and abortion being at the forefront of a lot of that. And as soon as they have the opportunity, right, these conservatives, whether it's the mega donors, whether it's the small person donating a dollar every day to Trump's campaign, at the end of the day, their goal was to say, we want the world to look a particular way. And when you have somebody in the Supreme Court that has access to those things, that can actually make that can actually make decisions on behalf of those thinkers because they kicking it in Indonesia, you can't tell me that's not a payoff.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that that Clarence Thomas isn't being pushed, isn't being manipulated. He may even believe already the shit that they saying.
Listen. You know what I mean?
But he's getting that payola. You can't look at it no other way.
I think it's chestnut checkers when we look at the payola and how it runs. And shout out to Outside for being in the comments. What's up to you tonight? But you know, I think people have figured out, and these super billionaires and these super donors have figured out that I can't just play Congress. I got to go to the top, right? I can't. The president can't be seen, you know, within a 10-foot pole of me. We see that how improprieties get exposed with Donald Trump, so we can't really deal with directly with the president. So we'll just deal with all of the other secondary, tertiary, ancillary components and fixtures of the political systems that influence what that president does. So I think it's I'm not going to waste my time on Congress people and senators. I'm going straight to the courts.
To the courts.
One of the other defining components and fixtures of how this society works. And this is supposed to be an untouchable group of people. Not swayed, not implicated, not impacted by public opinion or individual private opinion. Right? But rather ones who are solely fidelitous to what the Constitution says in the letter of law. And so...
Interpreting the Constitution. Period, that's why we took the L that we took is because like the Supreme Court, their role as the judicial branch of the federal government is to interpret what the Constitution means.
Yeah.
Like us as leftists, we taking L's right now because like that final authority is made up of people who are our political enemies.
That part, right? And so Ms. Ma'am going up in the chat said every annual corporate ethics training includes the appearance of a conflict of interest, in quotes, as a cause for concern and grounds for something that should be reported. Now, they ask or give you the opportunity to self-report, but we also know that in moments where you are exposed for those improprieties that you get caught in the HR and dealt with accordingly, right? And so I think it's important to understand that every other space, corporate, private, public, civil government, you are held to these standards. But all of a sudden, as we see, big dogs up in the Supreme Court didn't think they were held to that same standard. And ProPublica said, not true.
They actually, they point out that a few ethics professors are actually saying that they broke the law. There were laws that were passed after Watergate that requires justices, judges, members of Congress, and federal officials to disclose most gifts, trips, etc., mm-hmm. That two law experts argue, as well as you know him chilling on the yacht. They saying that him not disclosing that he kicking it like this is actually violation of those ethics laws.
Yeah,
this got to be the season of accountability, right? It can't just be about Trump, right? Listen, as much as we've had beef with Clarence Thomas in terms of him literally representing the black conservative, the race traitor, I say it. Clarence Thomas has represented the race traitor.
Yeah.
Now he has broken the law.
Yeah.
And if we're saying that, hey, that what's happening with Donald Trump is an example of draining the swamp, it's an example of holding people in power accountable, right? Because listen, as black leftists, the fight that we have to focus on is the one of the rights of the people.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why conservatives are our political enemies is because they don't give a fuck about the rights of people that don't believe or don't think or don't look like them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what when I use that phrase political enemy, that's what I'm talking about. Like I'm even in even on the past show, I've said black conservatives, come home. We can have our ideological beefs, but yeah. what impacts us is still there's a commonality, right? We was raised by black conservatives at the end of the day. Like
if we being honest,
raised by black conservatives. So that's not that much of an issue. If I can talk and have conversations with my grandmother, you know what I'm saying, with her Christian, like super Christian Creflo Dollar watching, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
come on. If I can have conversations with her, like, listen, me and you can do that, but we gotta have that we gotta have that understanding that the anti-black aspect that come out of white conservatism can't be replicated in black conservatism and think that you steal any type of benefit to black people.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And Clarence Thomas is somebody who's carried that banner, who's held that torch for years, and now he broke the law. Now he broke the law.
Because remember how it happened when the professor was getting roasted in class and met the man in red, man was like, get him.
Yeah.
Get him.
Sammy Davis haircut happened around the side looking. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, yeah, that's how I feel. I don't know, and I don't really hate it because you know when you have the position you have on shit like affirmative action, you get what you get. But it's hard to feel sorry for him. Like get cooked. You know what I'm saying?
That's what you mean?
Hard. The same system that you fell in love with is gonna tear that ass up, and I'm here for it,
man. Because you know what happens to you, and like because that's just even bringing up one of the most recent, but one of the most impactful Supreme Court cases in the last decade, and that was them overturning Roe v. Wade. Or really, within the last 30 years, Roe v. Wade was so important. Them overturning it, right, is huge because it impacted the reproductive rights of women in particular states. Now, that's why I say to this day, I'm extremely proud of the state of Kansas because with everything that they get wrong when it comes to politics, the fact that Kansas voted as a state to say, yes, keep abortion legal, yes. Right, okay. But how many? But just right across state line road in Missouri, right down the street, Missouri had trigger laws that was straight up like 14 to 30 days or whatever after it was overturned. Ooh, they had it locked in.
Yeah.
Right now, if you lived in Kansas City, that ain't a big of an issue because you're just gonna hop on the highway and have your right to. You know what I'm saying? But if you live in St. Louis, East St. Louis, you know what I mean? A woman in those type of circumstances, right? Like you are being put in a position that can't be quantified, that can't be fully understood, because the impact of having a child when you're in a position that may not be the best decision, right? The impact that's gonna have on a child's life and it's gonna be having on yours, like we can't even begin to fathom because the amount of stories and so angle. But as much as we could talk about the issue of abortion, these niggas is getting put on yachts and shit just to turn around and deny certain people their rights.
Yeah.
Regardless of how you feel about that question, like there, Clarence Thomas is bought the fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
He's paid off. The fact that these are things, because he know he ain't supposed to doing it because he ain't reporting it on his ethics shit.
That part.
The way that he's supposed to. Legally, he's supposed to be reporting this shit.
Mm-hmm.
If he thought it was the right thing to do, he wouldn't have no problem reporting it. It's no way we can look at the Supreme Court with any type of credibility at this point. Yeah. We know people like Amy Coney Barrett, people like Brett Kavanaugh, really, or and then you could take it as far as even Neil Gorsuch. Only reason these people are in there, is because one, Barack Obama got denied his ability to select the Supreme Court justice,
mm-hmm.
right? Donald Trump. And conservatives, because you like listen, the conservative that retired that opened up space for Kavanaugh. I know that he got paid off too.
Yeah, we also came.
He got paid off too.
RBG needed to retire, and instead of retiring, she went ahead and stayed in her role. It's also been due.
She stayed in her role. Yeah, like that. Didn't do Democrats no favors, but because they wanted her to retire under Obama so that Obama could
elect somebody to replace her.
Right. But she went on to glory under Donald Trump.
That's such a nigga way. And you know how we normalize ways of saying stuff in our culture and realize don't nobody say like don't know white people be like such and such.
Yeah, white people ain't gonna say this. Yeah, but, you know, I guess, yeah, that's what happened. And so we're looking at, as much as we complain about Congress, as much as we complain about the executive branch, like at this point, the whole shit has been spoiled.
Yeah.
Like, and we've had conversations about how politicians are paid off and how, you know, it's all about money. But when you get it confirmed and it's no longer speculation, you got it right there in front of you. The credibility of the Supreme Court is shot. Like, and go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying, when we look at the credibility of the Supreme Court being shot, and specifically him, Ms. Maija, and we referenced this before, lest we forget who Clarence Thomas is married to, it's just one big conflict of interest, hypocrisy, and corruption. And I think what's unique is that, you know, as the season of accountability is upon us, as the plug has talked about, you know, we couldn't really nail Clarence Thomas down, because at the end of the day, even though I'm certain she was like, on January 6th, was like, whoo, been a long ass day of trying to make sure the riots go through successfully. Now we got to make sure we get, like, she's coming home reporting back to him, but he can't be held responsible for another person and their actions. So it was too hard to stick him down and peg him down. But his season has come. His chickens are at home roosting at this point, because now it's about the things he did. Now, specifically, it's not about the people around him or speculation or his politics. It's about straight up and down law breaking and rule breaking, which is about to stick way more than any of these other allegations have.
Way more than any. I mean, but even the fact that, like, because, like, let's be for real. We know that the system is broken when the people inside of the system can manipulate the rules that's supposed to keep them in check in a way that all of those rules don't matter. Like, Donald Trump should have actually been impeached. Partisanship is the reason why Donald Trump wasn't impeached. Right. Well, he was impeached. Partisanship is the reason why he wasn't removed from office.
Right.
Partisanship is the reason why they got away with all the lie. Well, they ain't even get away with it because they being sued right now. But why they was able to get away with lying about, you know, who won the election. Partisanship is the reason why Jeannie Thompson. I mean, because even think about the conversation. She's reaching out to Mark Meadows, chief of staff in the White House, to be like, hey, do whatever y'all got to do to keep them in there. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So with that type of understanding, it's like, regardless of the disconnect that they trying to that they attempt to create, he was already held accountable for the other shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Regardless. And now this, though, as much energy as Democrats is putting behind Donald Trump and locking Donald Trump up, we need to get, like, Clarence Thomas need to get up out of there.
Yes. Period.
He's paid off. It's payola. You are 144
tip of the iceberg, and that they start unearthing a lot of shit about all the rest of them, because you can't be the only one. And shit, I don't care if you're a Democrat. If you in here kind of getting the bread and getting broke off from the side, you gotta go, because there are just so many faulty levels of what is supposed to be an impenetrable three-tiered system of government, and that is supposed to be working like a well-oiled machine of checks and balances. And ain't no checks and ain't no balance, because everybody got some money, somebody in their hands, some private interests, some clear biases, some relationships and fidelities to external ideologies or external politics or private shareholders like billionaires and shit. All of that is trash. So exposure, exposure, exposure. Do your job or go home and be a private citizen like the rest of us, helpless.
Facts.
Under the strong arm of the state and of the law. Come home and complain with us on our timelines, because you don't get fucking special treatment just because you got nominated to some position. Like, that's my turn.
Election season is starting now with the chopper.
Yeah.
And if this isn't a important question going into 2024 for you, coming into this conversation, you need to leave this conversation knowing that the conversation of accountability is this year's theme for this election season. Can the Supreme Court?
This is a question you can answer.
Yeah, they can be. They can be. They can
What's
be.
What's the question? So we have the people who listen who can't see.
Can a Supreme Court justice be removed for ethics violations? Yes, they can. They can be impeached, but it is a high bar.
Yeah, it's
unprecedented. It is a high bar to climb. It's definitely unprecedented. I mean, just as hard it is to impeach a president, it's even harder to impeach a Supreme Court justice. Because I mean, again, these are lifetime appointees, right? And so, and in a lot of ways, again, they interpret what's constitutional and what's not. That means that even their role, their job, what they're held accountable to, they get the question. They, you know what I'm saying? They get the whole question. Yeah, AOC is calling for the AOC is calling for the impeachment and the expulsion of Clarence Thomas, and we're gonna see what comes from that after this report came out. But again, it's the season of accountability, y'all. That's the motto for this for this election season. So, with that being said, you can go ahead and close out, Toya.
Listen, y'all are wonderful. Y'all are amazing. Y'all been in the chat and in the comments talking to us, and I'm grateful for that. Next Thursday, same time, same place, a little closer to 8:30 though, 7:30 rather, Pacific Standard Time, so we get the ball rolling on time. But it's spring. I hope y'all enjoying these longer days. I hope it's getting a little bit warmer where you are. I hope that as we change seasons, not only in the environment and in the elements, that the seasons begin to change in your favor as well. You know what I'm saying? We got a new opportunity. We up in the spring, so shake off some new things. I also want to rip this brand I'm rocking, one of my favorite little brands that I found on IG. This is Absolute Victory Every Day, also known as ABE, also known as the AV. So if y'all are interested in some new merch, I don't know these people. I do know they black on though, and I really enjoy their gear. So go check out Absolute Victory Every Day. And if you want to send me a hoodie, let me know. DM me, then I'll give you my address if I'm your favorite podcaster out there. And excuse me. Ooh, I got choked up just thinking about the possibility of y'all sending me a hoodie. I got so excited. But no, in real life, go rep the brand. They got shirts. They got hoodies. They got out a whole bunch of stuff. Big love to y'all. It's been Toya G. It has been The Political Plug. We love y'all. See y'all next week. Yeah.
Peace.